respect is what you know you'll get at the Warrior Connection, but around the nation and around the world, what we keep finding out is veterans aren't getting the medical care they need. Just again, in the last couple of days, we found out that another Vietnam veteran had medical problems in another VA, and he died waiting for an ambulance and response less than a few hundred feet away from the ER, and they just let him die. This is Albuquerque, New Mexico. As you all know, we talked about on the radio show several weeks ago, we had another veteran die in the parking lot outside the emergency room at the Hines up in Chicago at the Downey Great Lakes Navy Hospital VA, and it just goes on and on. Denise, I mean, when does it stop? Do you have any idea?
No, Doug. You know, sadly, these are going to happen, and I hope that they get the top level cleaned out and get the middle level and lower levels cleaned down. We don't even know if there was an automatic defibrillator around at that facility. But to have medical people around and stretchers and not load somebody on doing CPR and get them where they need to go is just unbelievable. You know, the one that died was, I think, in the cafeteria. It wasn't in the same building as their ER. But, my God, you know, common sense people. And there's a lot of vets that know buddy care, no CPR. You know, to sit there and wait may have, you know, doomed the guy to, you know, certain death, whereas he had a chance if they'd get a stretcher, load him on, do CPR as they're going. You and I have done CPR on the go, I know.
You've been involved in working in hospitals and teaching in hospitals for over 40 years. Don't they have a code blue where you get a super responsive response team, and no matter where you are in the hospital, don't you have that automatically? At least
yeah,
that's what I've learned.
They have it in every hospital, Doug, and it's just, you know, I'm not going to second-guess them. I don't know what happened actually there. At either instance that you're talking about. So, you know, it's hard to second guess them, but you think you're on the battlefield, you know, and if you're not getting a response, get them to where you need to get them, you know. Last week we did a lot of talking about various things, and I want to mention that I want to remember those that have died. In June, I caught it up to date, and I have 37 obits. These are paid obits, people. I know there's more that are dying every day. I've got four veterans. And just keeping track this way, you know, we could put this list together, give it to them, say, have you accounted for them on our death list for the Gulf War vets? We've had no data update. Our claims are being denied at the 80% rate, if not greater. Gulf War vets, you've got a meeting in September in D.C. It's not firm until they publish it in the Federal Registry, but it's September 22nd and 23rd, the Research Advisory Committee. And I can't tell you how much it means to get new faces up there for the meeting. Last time we went up, and then we went to the Hill. We worked on our funding issue with the Senate side to get our funding for the VA, DOD CDMRP funding for the Senate side. We'd already done the House side. People, you cannot sit back. You've got to put your claim in. You've got to work your illness. But you need to do more. When I tell you to call U.S. senators in D.C. and get their veteran staffer on the phone, get their name, their email, and stay in touch with them until we get our bills passed. That's what it takes, and it takes boots on the ground, okay? And we had about 12 individuals that came from across the country, one from Oregon, one from Texas, one from Oklahoma that got on the road, gave out his path. Other vets could have joined him. We had one from North Carolina do the same thing. open their car to people jumping in with them. We had one from Indiana, Pennsylvania, driving in. No one jumped in the car with them. These people shared a room at a low-cost motel, a block and a half from the metro that takes them right to the VA headquarters, right to the meeting. Metro will connect you anywhere in town. They were sharing rooms, three and four to a room, to save money, because we put FundMe sites up, no one donated, okay? Very few, if any, donated. We had Connie from Texas fly in. You know, guys, when we have car seats available, and you're welcome to jump in, and you don't, you're letting yourself down, you're letting your fellow veterans down. We're all ill. There's not one of us I've talked to that, you know, isn't ill. One of ours that came has gotten, you know, more ill since he made the trip, but he made that trip. And it takes getting up there and being seen, wearing your Gulf War hat, and telling them, we need this done. Okay? It doesn't come without a price. You don't get it automatically. We have not gotten anything for Gulf War veterans without being people dedicated to the mission, up there working the hill to get these bills written, to get them passed. That's what it takes, people. If you can't get up there, you make the phone calls, as we ask you to do. We still have two bills in the Senate side for our Gulf War vets. One is the Gulf War Veteran Research Reform Act of 2014. That's 4261 that we got out of the House. The other one is our bill for Desert Storm Memorial. Both of them have gotten through the House. They're in the Senate. Of course, the Senate is concentrating on the big scandal, the wait list. We've got to get that through and signed. But there's other issues. There's a VVA-sponsored bill to get us a environmental chemical, you know, to look at this as chemical toxins that affect decades.
And it affects everybody all over, because, I mean, I pulled up a story out of Army Times and Air Force Times again today. I'm reading back, and Fort McClellan, Alabama, where I was at, where all the women went through that went in the Army, that's a toxic wasteland. And I mean,
and they have a bill up, too, that needs help. And people, we can do it from home by phone calls, by emails, follow up with that staffer you talk to. But help get others that are willing to get there and walk that hill. We can't just count on VFW, the Legion, and vets, although we have a lot of support for our bills, but it counts. I can't tell you how much it counted just having about 11 people up there.
You know, I had a meeting this last week, getting back to the legislatures here in Illinois, and one-on-one with their staffers. And when I went with the documentation, the information, with the direct plan, recommendations, again, not that I just put together, we've been, you know, put together from a whole bunch, was working together, they were extraordinarily receptive and listening and saying, oh, my God, this is real. And then we could go on the Internet and look at the actual documents or pull the reports up and photos and videos. And when they looked at it, they're going, we've got to help you. We've got to help you.
Yeah,
that's that one-on-one connection we make.
We know when they're going to be home. Veterans should be flooding their office beforehand. You can pull up the schedules of the House and Senate and know when they're going to be home, like they were home during the 4th of July week. Okay, that whole week they were home. You should have called ahead of time, made an appointment, got a group of vets together, gone to their office, right in their home office. This is what's not happening with the Gulf War vets. The Iraqi vets have screamed and yelled. That's how they got their caregiver bill. That's how they've gotten their GI Bill. They have been active. Our Gulf War vets have sat back and just taken what the rest of us have worked our tails off to give for them. And it takes each and every one being involved, Doug. I can't say how much it means. And we sat next to Tom Donnelly when he was suffering ALS and he's died. to sit next to the general and testify next to the general that had ALS, that was in a wheelchair with respiratory assistance available, you know, to know what he was putting out for the cause to get ALS, not only for Gulf War vets, but for any military vet. That is the kind of sacrifice that it means.
Mike was, when Mike was dying, he was doing all this stuff, and his dad, Tom, was totally involved, and his sister, Denise. I mean, working with them and seeing the dedication that the Donnelly family had to get all this through was beyond comprehension. And then when we're sitting there doing the medical assessments and watching it being done or having it done on each of us, and the confirmation coming back in front of them at the hearings, I mean, it was, I don't even know where it was. I mean, again, opening the mind and the eyes, because one thing that bothers me so much in the 4th of July and all the parades and all the hoo-ha and all the rah-rah-rah and all this stuff, there's individuals out there today that don't know what happened and why it's happening, what needs to be done.
Yeah, every day we look at our Facebook page, Gulf War Illnesses, and I go, where have you been, people? You know, you and I have been out there. I got out there right after the war with questioning and questioning. I was up at the first meeting up in Bethesda with Patricia Axelrod. Leah Steele was there. Dr. Karini Bath, Dr. Durakovich, I think, was there. People that came out to support us, and that was in April of 94. I helped get people up there for the first hearings in November of 93.
You know, Andres knew everything that happened because, ladies and gentlemen, for those that don't know, Colonel Dr. Andres Cornegie-Both was one of the leaders of Bowers Raiders. He was at 3rd MedCom. His in-law was General Block, and so they had a big knockdown, drag-out brawl in December of 1990, when we're trying to get it all out, and then all the stuff, information started getting out, and we tried to get it done, and the kibosh got put on it, and Andres kept yelling and screaming. I'll never forget, Denise, you and I were at the Center for Disease Control Conference, and what that was, in the end of February, March of 1999, when Andres, in his full uniform, got up there and challenged DOD on the lies and how they had actually altered the formal reports he had written. I mean, I never...
We
Joe
were
Patrick
there
was going
the year anniversary that the Kuwaiti embassy put on with General Horner.
Yeah.
And the DOD was spewing their dog and pony show. He left the podium. He would not stay on the podium with those guys.
You know, Susan, who was a bad guy at that time, is another one that got a big bonus. That was in a recent release, too, a press finding that... So. It's the same ones going over and over and over, way back to cover it up, deny, 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 delay, delay, deny, and lie.
I will tell you, each of the vets that sacrificed to come the end of April, 1st of May, they were hurting. They were hurting. When they got back to their rooms, they crashed, but they got up the next morning and went to it again. I cannot tell you, because we were all in pain. Our bodies are hurting.
One thing that's happened here at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois, they're taking down some of the old barracks without any controls, and obviously the contamination and destruction of the stuff is being spread all over. And we're already seeing medical complications again because, as we said before, people have had a little dose, a little dose, a little dose, and then they get another dose, and then all of a sudden you go over and crash. So with all this respiratory irritation, the eye irritation, the skin irritation from the same thing what we're seeing, we got the burn pits, we got the destruction of all the infrastructure, releases all over. And like what happened to Rollo Dolph, the sprayers came in the spring when the farmers were spraying their pesticides and took him over, and he crashed and burned.
Yeah. We know the exposures that we had. We cannot pinpoint. We probably never will be able to pinpoint the one.
There never was one.
We've always talked about the combined effect. And I'm tired of seeing it debated and people saying it had to be the shots, it had to be the shots, or whatever. People, we are 24 years after the fact. What we're going to find is through our funded studies, like Dr. Klimas and Dr. Broderick down in Florida with the biomarkers, the Roskam Institute down there with Fiona, and, you know, having an animal model that like we've had before, using the mice and the rats. But this time we're letting them go longer so they see the effect. They are using those mice and mouse to try potential treatments on them to see if it'll work. That's where our answers will come. We have to keep pushing for the right research, and for me, the right research is coming out of the DoD CDMRP-funded studies. We're looking at the mitochondrial, which is the energy cell of the body. If you look up mitochondrial diseases, it mimics our symptoms very well. I talked about hypercoagulation last week. We can talk some more about that. All these things are affecting the oxygen in the body. Okay, if you don't get good oxygen supply in the body, if you have thick blood, you're going to have problems, complications occurring. You're going to have the strokes, the pulmonary embolus, the deep vein thrombosis, where you can have, you know, a blood clot go wherever in the system and cause problems. You can have the coronary artery stenosis. You can have the carotid artery stenosis. You can have the blood pressure changes that I talked about. We were going to talk about the eyes, Doug. You had not thought about the oxygen and going in the chamber and the effect on the eyes. You've had a lot of eye problems. Others have had eye problems. The eyes are the most sensitive organ in the body to changes in oxygenation.
You know, the other thing, too, we're seeing with the contamination is going around. Not only do we have the radiation cataracts, but we're seeing the optic nerve damage, severe optic nerve damage. And, again, the contamination, as the doctor said,
is very sensitive to any chemical exposure. I went in years ago to the DoD registry. They called me back. They did this little test where it feels like a little eardrum in your ears, you know, percussion, whatever. That doctor called me, wanted me to come back. I came back. I have Briegel's report in my briefcase. And, you know, I was saying, what is it, noise damage, blah, blah, blah. He said, no, you know, it looks like ototoxicity. And I went, isn't that interesting? Being a nurse, I know that chemotherapy can do that. Certain antibiotics can do that. High-level aspirin over time can do that. It is chemical damage. You get the nerves. You get the autonomic nervous system. Okay? We have every system in our body that's connected. You know, they don't work without relationship to the other. Thyroid. If you look back at radiation studies, the atomic studies and all that were done in Japan, you know, after the atomic bomb, thyroid problems, even after Japan with the reactors that, you know, the tsunami that hit them, you see the thyroid cancers develop.
The other thing, too, we want to look at the thyroid. I mean, the temperature for ourselves, I mean, we're having all these things, and you've seen this on me. We've seen it on a lot of others when you and I have been together. I mean, when we've been with the doctors and treating and looking at doing assessment, temperature regulation when the body is a nightmare. And, again, this comes back to the thyroid and with the hypothalamus and trying to regulate your body temperature so you can get cold on a hot day, get hot on a cold day, and trying to maintain standard normal temperature regulation has just turned into a friggin' nightmare.
Yeah. And, you know, then you have pulse rate changes and blood pressure changes. Just like Dr. Baumschweiger would show, you check the left and the right side, you start laying down. Having been laid down for 15 minutes, you check left and right. You then sit up for 10 minutes at least. And take your pulse and blood pressure again. Then you stand up for 10 to 15 minutes, and you take it again. You're going to see the changes that are abnormal.
Me
we
and
saw
Lee
it
saw
early
that.
On, and it's continued.
Me and Lee saw that in Washington in his studies, and I know he was freaked out when he started seeing how severe it was.
Yeah, we had to teach him to do all that, whereas Bronick was doing it pretty quickly over at Georgetown. Was part of his normal thing to have the nurses doing that every morning when we got up.
Now, I came out of church today. I had to lecture at church this morning. When I came out, it never ends. we got a, another person came up and said, well, we got another individual. The teeth are just breaking off and falling out. How can we help them? What's happening to the dental? Well, we've had these reports over and over, and we know we got decalcification, dephosphorization because of depleted uranium and radiation. We
right.
know we got all these other chemical toxins affect calcification. We know that it affects the entire oxygenation and the blood flow to the dental, to the tooth. We know that all this stuff is nailing.
And we were seeing the disc problems early on, Doug. You know, that we talked about the degenerative bones happening in the disc and the spine, degenerating, getting soft. That can cause problems with the spinal cord and the movement of extremities. You know, so this is a complex, multi-symptom, multi-organ situation. But when you take it down to the levels that we know now through our research on hypercoagulation, through looking at the red blood cells that are not shaped normally, through looking very closely early on, we could, if you took the time to look at the lab values before and after the war, when your red blood cells are a nice, normal level, and then we come home and we have a shift to an abnormal, not so much abnormal, but low normal.
Mom, I think when we look at the look under the microscope and we start seeing the blood cells again, when we do that reverse phase contrast thing, where you start seeing a donut shape on the blood cell. I mean, it was just kind of like there's something really wrong here. So again, perfusion is messed up. Nutritional supplementation is messed up. I mean, this goes back to the mitochondria, exactly what, you know, she's been finding and reporting over and over again.
You got to look at the vitamin B. You got to look at vitamin C. You have to look at your calcium levels. You have to look at your vitamin D levels. Not one of them that I've heard of, GovWar, is having anywhere close to normal vitamin D or testosterone level in the males. You know, and you have to supplement those. One of the things that Dr. Ray, Dr. Johnson, the environmental doctors were in there supplementing vitamins early on, a lot of antioxidant therapy. He begged the VA when we were over there to teach the doctors, you know, the simple methods of you've got to get vitamin balance in them. You've got to get good antioxidants to battle this stuff. You've got to try saunas. We do have the Hubbard now funded, I think it's a six-week program. So we are taking volunteers. They have to probably live in the area. But they're doing the sauna treatments, the antioxidants, I think, trying to help even now. We had a group of those people at the CDC that had done it before then. I had been approached before then in 95, 96, you know, to do some of that. And we finally got them to the DOD CDMRP program for GovWar and finally got it funded research to truly do a research study and show that this works. Dr. Ray was using sauna early on. Dr. Johnson had hyperbaric set up to help with the oxygenation. Dr. Ray tried again, you know. Met him out in Phoenix when they were having an environmental medicine meeting. Got Mr. Benz, Leah still to talk to him. And, you know, he told him once again what he's tried to do. Dr. Ray and many of the chronic fatigue doctors out there are kind of duplicating what Dr. Ray's been doing for years. He tries to get doctors that have any interest at all in looking at alternatives. You know, when they have relatives that are sick and they open their eyes and go, hey, there's nothing really out there in mainstream medicine. And he brings them in for 6 weeks or so, like a, you know, fellowship. He you know, involves them in his clinic, teaching them as they go so that when they go out of there, they're more educated and informed. there's been more programs developed through the American Academy of Environmental Medicine to have training programs before their meetings or separate from their meetings, training them. The VA has not grabbed hold of any of that.
I think the VA is still hiding the documents, and that's what's frightening. And the other thing, too, as I went and looked at some of the various veterans organizations, and I was on them today trying to find the actual reports, whether you're looking for the post-deployment physical assessment form, or you're looking for the burn put, or the DU medical order, or you're looking for the pesticide stuff on the pesticides. I still can't find that on all these websites, and I would think that the veteran service organizations would be posting these up so people can get them. You know, like we got the physician's directives that, thank God, Congressman Rodney Davis are now getting out all over for the Vision 11 medical directives. Without them, we wouldn't have those going all over the place. But why is this still hidden? I mean, why do the VA leaders intent on hiding so many documents from their doctors?
When General Hinchey, I think her name is, female general that retired that's over benefits, comes out and states she doesn't want to call it Gulf War illness because claims would have to be accepted then. That was this past year that she stated that after the IOM came out. You know, this, for them to put down, we'll have to pay for it. It's just like Sanders and Shays has always said. She's going to send them to war. You need to think about the budget afterwards for the damage we do to human beings. And we have to compensate. We have to learn to treat them. They have not been treating them, as we know, Doug. We have patients, veterans, taking in research studies highlighted, the RAC report highlighted, and asking their doctors, please, don't just push this off. Read. Become informed. And the doctor's saying they don't have time. That's what's going on.
You know, in a Army Times, I was going through the past issues, and this was on one of the recent Army Times. And this was a quarter-page ad, and it says, I'm just going to read this. More military die by their own hand. In 2012, 349 active duty American military personnel committed suicide, more than were killed in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. Veterans are killing themselves at a rate of 22 per day, one every 65 minutes. But with prescriptions for psychiatric drugs for soldiers and veterans have been skyrocketing by nearly seven times, and with a full third of all military suicide prescription medication, we have to ask, should we be trusting psychiatry with our soldiers' mental health? This was a quarter-page ad, and it said in
here. There's been articles out recently that the VA pushing the psychotropics is not working. That is not a cure, okay? But there's other research institutes out there doing dynamic work that's not being brought into the VA to be used, okay? It's an atrocity. It's malfeasance, as far as I'm concerned. All those big words I used back at one of the meetings. And you remember that one at the science building right across from the Vietnam Wall, that big, beautiful building.
I never forget when we went in there and Institute of Medicine were testifying, and they gave us a parking spot right outside the door, which, like, thank you, Kathy. But I mean, Merle Nass got up there and told the truth on anthrax, and they flat out told everybody they were going to disregard the evidence. And this goes back to the same thing. Thank God to Jimmy Toot and the Regal Commission report. The reason Iraq got the weaponized anthrax is because the U.S. Army had Fort Detrick sent it to them, and that's in the...
Yeah, and people have to remember, Regal was on the export, the banking committee, and that's where they nailed them with everything that had been given to Iraq, was through his banking committee, and it was an investigation through Senator Regal. We had Senator Regal, we had Rockefeller, then it fell to Congressman Shays, and I was told we had the wrong sword bearer, because at that time McCain and Shays were working for campaign finance reform. There was a lot of hoopla about that on the other sides of the aisles. I said, well, we didn't have volunteers coming up to us and saying, we'll take it on. We didn't have a VA committee on our side taking it on. We had others. We had Shays Government Reform and Oversight in Burton. And from there, then we worked our way back because we got the RAC going, and then we became a topic under the Subcommittee of Oversight and Investigation with the VA. That is what's kept us going all these years, is at least having that. For people to put down the RAC is just unbelievable in my viewpoint.
Well, that 2008
if anybody
report
pulls up the testimonies given by Mr. Jim Bentz, a Vietnam vet, a lawyer, a businessman that brought in ultrasound, I believe it was, before all the ultrasound was available, to even say anything negative about him when he has stood so firm for us, pointed out how Vietnam vets were treated differently in the law from our Gulf War vets. I still have that testimony. I read over it. That was to Shays Committee. We've had investigations. We developed websites. I was faxing things to our DS mom. If she wasn't there, I'd fax her stuff. She'd get it up on her website. We did websites. We did bulletin boards on the old AOL. We did email groups through Yahoo. We have Facebook. And now, 24 years later, we have people now waking up. I guess they wanted to continue to serve and ignore their health complaints.
I think one of the problems we run into, and we got to come back to it, and this is something that bothers me horribly because, again, with the 4th of July, get all the former soldiers and warriors and a whole bunch of us here locally. We were on riding on the floats and the parades and marching in the parades. And you've got that hoo-ha or whatever you want to call it, the current thing, but that pride and everything else, the integrity and whatever. And yet now the realization that we've been abandoned, we've been dumped, and we were lied to. Medical care is deliberately being withheld. Individuals are dying in the VA as they seek care. And it's not just one. It's over and over again.
And our vets that are dying of Gulf War illness and their families not being reached out to by the DOD to acknowledge, bring in those family members, they lost.
You know, when we got the autopsies done, for example, Sue Reardon and Terry Reardon, when we did get the autopsy done on Terry Reardon, it all showed up lock, stock, and barrel. And the other ones, when the autopsies have been done, it all shows up.
Yes, abandonment, you know, by the DOD not reaching out to survivors of Gulf War illness, the wives that have lost their loved ones, the husbands that have lost their loved ones. I have several females that have died in the last month, nurses. We've lost some doctors. And for them to continue at 24-year point that there isn't a problem and acknowledge it and come out and do everything they can to help us. For the VA research, and oh, by the way, Tim O'Leary's back in charge of that area. Somebody that needs to be looked at. We need clean people. We don't need the old legacy people, as we call them. We need clean people. That's why they need to clean house at the VA. And for them to say they've budgeted so much money for VA research and used it for other things, you know, or haven't used the amount of money that was there available. The risk centers, you know, I have to say, when it went to Orange and they're doing a mitochondrial study, when they're doing the scans, step forward for them. Congratulate them for that. They are trying now.
You know, one thing we have to remember, and this showed up here recently.
Then they tie their hands and don't have these people able to speak out clearly.
We got to remember that all of the guys on the Navy ships off of the coast, too, are affected because I've got an individual locally that's horribly affected from the contamination, and he was on the Ranger, and all his medical problems are definitely there, and that showed up again here, and the same thing is coming down. It's like, the Navy guys weren't exposed, and it didn't happen, but they're seeing all the same health effects.
Same thing about Agent Orange. They had the battle to get the brown water veterans in the riverboats covered. They're still fighting for the blue water, you know, to be covered. They still have the 123s that were retired. They were known to be contaminated. Those pilot and crew members that, you know, had flown on those were not covered. It's like the Vietnam vets said never again. When I testified the first time, I said, they said never again. And I mean never, ever, ever, ever again. And here we go to war again. OIF, OEF, burn pits, the DU usage, and it continues on.
You know, when we destroy all these infrastructures, all of the inorganic compounds, heavy metals, all the radiological, biological materials that are released into the environment have a catastrophic effect on the environment. And when you have all these complex exposures, I never forget, you and I were together when we had the conversation with General Chuck Horner. And for those that don't know, General Chuck Horner was Schwarzkopf's counterpart in the Air Force. And if you go to page 390 of Schwarzkopf's autobiography, Doesn't Take a Hero, it talks about the decision that we made in December 1990 to destroy all of chemical and biological stockpiles Iraq had because, again, we shipped them to them. And Andres knew that, and he told us he was the senior officer who had all the information.
And the weather report was in the Regal report.
Yeah, and this came out before. We knew this in theater before the Regal report came out. Jim Toot got it all out to everybody. But so we have all this stuff coming on down, and I never forget where we were at the CDC, and Jimmy Toot and you and I, we were sitting there with Mikey Kilpatrick, and I think we almost had Mikey convinced to do things, and he went and called Bernie Rotzker in the middle of the night, and next thing we know, it all fell apart.
Yeah, we were convincing him to go out and see some vets that are really sick and visit them in their homes. We were just that close to getting them to really see what had happened. Too bad we didn't get them up to the room when Dr. Baumswager were examining patients up in the room. And let me tell you, when you can put a soldier at the door, have a clear path all the way past the beds to the window.
I'll never forget the command surgeon for the 82nd Airborne when he had his
awakening.
Close
your eyes and mark in place and
remember,
then migrate.
Denise, remember when the command surgeon for the famed 82nd Airborne had the awakening there at the CDC meeting?
Yeah, flight surgeon.
God almighty. I mean, when he woke up, I mean, here you've got, I mean, the ladies and gentlemen, 82nd Airborne, the 101st
were
the best
antibiotics
units in the military.
That we needed to get you on.
Pardon?
I think he's the one that took you to get your antibiotic prescription filled.
Yeah.
I would like to be a fly on that top of the ceiling of that car. I'm sure y'all had a good discussion.
It just never ends. I mean, now we're getting ready to again. We've got another war looming, okay? Again, obviously, the Sunnis and the Shiites been going back in 1917. We divided up the Middle East and the Sykes-Picot Treaty, and I've heard that discussed now of understanding what really happened. And one thing that I learned when we were dealing with in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, dealing with the royal family, and again, Andres has expressed this before in the meetings over and over again when we met with them and worked with them, is we have to understand the United States, England, and France have done so much damage in the Middle East of trying to control the resources for many years that even though the Shiites and the Sunnis and all the different factions will fight at each other, when push comes down to shove, we're their enemy all the way around, completely lock, stock, and barrel. So when we provide weapons to one side, the weapons go to the other side because they're all on one side against us. And I don't know when people are going to wake up to that, because that was part of the conversation.
And the wake up to the contamination of the equipment. I mean, you can't have chemicals coming downwind, okay, that didn't burn up when they were hit during the air war.
And the contamination was all over the equipment. Look at all that came back to the U.S. installations. We had total confirmation, you and I, one-on-one confirmation of contamination getting all the way back to Fort Hood and soldiers and military personnel getting sick at Fort Hood from contamination brought back. And they were in medical care. I mean,
not only that, but the paperwork that came back, and I think it went to Leavenworth. And then we started getting reports from people that had not deployed that was handling these boxes with sand that was contaminated. and trying to scan these things or whatever they were doing, and they were getting sick. I had phone calls from Vietnam vets out from the ports, huge warehouses with the, you know, rollers set up to guide the equipment through and all the sand and dust. They were taking blankets and donating them to shelters, and the K-Rats, I guess they were donating to shelters. And this stuff went outwards, you know. And I've talked about the contamination, secondary contamination of our equipment. Trucks, tanks, airplanes, pulling them apart for maintenance, you know, filters, pulling them out. The gas mask that, you know, you turned it in and somebody else that didn't go was pulling them apart. I was going, this is a nightmare.
You know, Andres wrote all this up in Alaskan disease totally years ago. I mean, he had it totally identified, and he's dead, obviously, unfortunately. But, I mean, today they're yelling and screaming and trying to figure out exactly what happened when Andres gave him the answer from day one. It's Alaskan disease. It's a combination of all this fine particulate, and you have to understand we're submicron in size. It's atomic level, getting all in there so it acts like a gas, even though it's a solid, and the contamination, you can't get it off of the clothes. I know when we did the DU project in the Nevada test site, we tried to launder and clean everything up, and we found out it was impossible to clean it.
Yeah, just like they did when they did atomic testing. There was no way to clean the ships.
And the same thing with the pesticides. I talked to the university professor here a couple of weeks ago that had done the research on this 30 years ago. And once clothing is contaminated with pesticides, you cannot clean it.
No.
You can't clean it. It binds up with the materials that clothing is made with, and it's impossible to clean. So
and
now you get outgassing.
And people brought their hair back and stored it under the baby's bed or wherever they had in Germany. You know, secondary contamination occurred. And to have gone so many years from the atomic vets and to go back and read some of the stuff, talk to the few that are alive, and I learned a lot from Coy Overstreet and that group that I went and met down in Albuquerque.
You had the pleasure of listening and learning from some of the greatest minds in the country.
Yeah, and DeMoncio with the Indians that did the mining. You know, I was like a little sponge, soaking it all in and putting it together and making phone calls to people. I remember calling one person. One of the Down Wonders sent me a paper, and it was from an engineering journal. And from there, I got the name of somebody that was doing research out at Palo Alto, I believe, on, you know, electromagnetic. And I called him and talked to his secretary, asked some questions. She took notes. Next thing I knew, I had this little stack of things delivered to my house. Went through all that, and I'm going, yeah, okay, electromagnetic fields. You know, I'm a different kind of nurse. I took squadron officer school and then command and staff, which I didn't finish up because I got waylaid by doing Gulf War illness stuff. But understanding how they shielded things in the command post back home, and that we didn't have that shielding in theater.
It was totally impossible. I mean, one thing that's frightening, and again, I remember when we got over there and got with the royal family.
I got these papers from this researcher. I think he's died since, but it's like Dr. Diaz also died, but I would call and ask these, you might think they were dumb questions, but I was asking questions and throwing things out at them, and all of a sudden I'd get a phone call back, or the one out in Palo Alto, I mean, he went and made copies of articles for me, and then he composed a letter, did it himself. The secretary made a point to tell me when I called to thank him. You know, she said, he did all that himself. He wouldn't let me help him. So, you know, whatever questions I had spurred him to, you know, think and put things together on the electromagnetic fields. He had written for the Atlantic, the journal Atlantic. He put books out. I was piecing things together.
Didn't they have it when we went to a conference in again, they were talking about all the magnetic field effects and EMF effects.
Yeah, we had
patriots that went to in Texas.
We had patriots that misfired. That was out of Atkinson's book, I believe, that I read. I was reading everything I could get my hands on.
Well, Patricia Axelrod did the work on the Patriot misfire, and she actually was the one that did that research. She's talked about it before. Now, the other thing, too, that showed up, and again, I'm seeing it firsthand today, is at the beginning of the Desert Storm, they had all these mobile decontamination trucks or decontamination trailers that we discarded immediately because they weren't going to work. You can't walk in one end and somehow magically decontaminate, come out the other end 10 feet away, and it's not going to be contaminated. And now those are showing up in a civilian market where they're selling civilian police and fire and fire departments, and they somehow think they're going to be able to decontaminate walking in the hot end of one trailer and coming out the cold end of another trailer without considering cross-contamination. I mean, there's all this equipment out there that's totally useless and totally trashed, and now it's getting sent out to the communities to use.
And then we have the contaminated base list. Not just contaminated bases, but, you know, DOD facilities like Rocky Mountain Arsenal out here. So, you know, people have to, you know, be aware to look at where they were stationed, which bases. Are they on the contamination list because they have other exposure? Then they go out and, you know, move, get out of the military, and they move out to some agricultural area where they're doing pesticide spraying from the, you know, airplanes. And they wonder why they can stabilize, and then all of a sudden they're sick again.
We know Fort Detrick is totally contaminated. Aberdeen Proving Ground is totally contaminated. Chesapeake Bay, I know. You know, we put nasty stuff out there in the islands in Aberdeen that should never been any place at all, and all this contamination got into the Chesapeake, so God knows what's happened there. But the military's been under the hammer to clean up all of those installations where they got water and air contamination. And one thing that we learned, it doesn't stop at any fence line. It doesn't stop at the edge of a battlefield. This stuff transmits for 10, 1,500, 1,000, gets in the upper atmosphere, and it goes around the world.
Yeah, and what about the sand they dug up from,
Camp Doha, all brought back to Idaho. Train loads of it. Because I remember when we were the general ordered Cyril and Army Environmental Policy Institute study right here at the University of Illinois to put together a whole plan to clean up Camp Doha in Kuwait. And eventually that original plan was written for Halliburton, Kellogg Brown Root, and they got it, and then they did dig it all up. I think Denny Williams is an incredible reporter that reported it, and all that's been taken back to American Ecology in Boise, Idaho, trainloads and trainloads of contamination.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
And then when we had the war in Iraq start, we all sat there in horror as we watched the tanks going in, and David Blum and the Blumobile covering it for CNN, I believe it was with CNN. And I was sitting there in horror, making calls, going, get some dust mask over there, some commercial dust mask, have them wear that. My God, bandanas don't cut it.
They went through the contaminated areas all over in southern Iraq and in Saudi
Arabia. I mean, he was coated
in
sand, and then he ends up getting out of a vehicle where you've been contained for hours on end making the invasion. And, you know, he had a thrombus. He had a thrombus that broke loose and killed him. I met his wife going through the airport one time. She's become a spokeswoman for deep vein thrombosis. And I was sitting there watching it, yelling and screaming, going, haven't they learned a thing? And I mean, then we get the GAO reports on our gas mask and on our suits.
Total failure. You know,
and to know it just makes a dusty agent, you know.
You know, for the police and the fire and the civilian world, all you need to find out is take the gas mask they've issued to you and put it on and then twist and turn your head and watch it break the seal. Or get sweaty or put some other stuff on there and get some grease or something, oil, and watch it break the seal and find out what happened, because all that research was done at Fort McClellan, Alabama, Nevada test site, and it was all reported up at Aberdeen, and now there's a brand new one. Army Times are talking about a new gas mask that's integral to the helmet, what's going to have battery-powered fans? I mean, where are you going to get the batteries? You know, I mean, hello.
I remember Jim Brown was the one that got all the GAO reports on the suits and how walking like 8 miles an hour, just walking, that this stuff would be a dusty agent, you know. I remember seeing all those reports when we got together. He'd have them in notebooks, and I'd be scanning them as fast as I could. You know, reading and absorbing as much as I could, short notice type thing. And it was just bombarding my mind, putting all the factors together. And for them, 24 years later, not to be compensating, not to be acknowledging and calling this Gulf War illness, not to be trying to treat, to gather info from the environmental doctors. If you've got to give them good antioxidants, you've got to provide that for them. Don't make them go buy it. You know, the government, the PXs at the daggum VA, they have all these supplements. Well, why can't they get them in the formulary so they can hand them out to the vets and start doing some nutritional education? And why you need to use calcium and vitamin D in a certain proportion for it to work correctly. Why you need to have the vitamin C on board, the vitamin Bs being checked, the vitamin D. That's finally gotten through. They are checking vitamin D and testosterone. I don't think they're doing as well with the females looking at the hormones. There are some of these, I yelled and screamed from day one, having been critical care, open heart, all the things I've done. I go, where's the standing orders? Where's the standing protocol of what lab work you need to have done right then, immediately after surgery, then 6 hours later? These are standard protocols, you know? And it's not there. It's not there.
Flustering beyond comprehension.
And trying to get them to look at hypercoagulation when we've had multiple studies now. You know, have them do a simple arterial venous blood gas and see where the venous oxygen is. Just doing that, which would be less expensive, but open your eyes and say, maybe these guys can use some oxygenation. You know, not just CPAP at night. Dr. Ray used a German protocol of 21 days of oxygenation, you know, an hour a day, I think it was, to help. And, you know, migraines can be treated with oxygen. They're not doing any of that. And I'm going, okay. How do we get them to hyperbaric treatment, if ever? You know, it's very frustrating to see our health going down. It's very frustrating to go on David Winnett's page and see people waking up. Even now, you know, I haven't put a claim in. I've put it off for whatever reason. What's really going on, guys? What's current, you know? Well, number one, the VA website, doctors don't even use it at the VA, but it's all there. Those are your benefits right now, the presumptives. You don't go for, I mean, Gulf War syndrome is an old term. It's not used, people. Gulf War illness, they don't recognize that, so you have to use their presumptive categories.
Hey, Denise, we're running out of time here. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to recommend, if you haven't, go to GaryNoel.com. And get the documentary that Gary has done with all of us involved. He talked to the experts all over the place. It's Killing Our Own. Incredible documentary. Get all the supporting documents there. Understand what Gary has done. He's worked on the homeless. He's worked on everything. Get those documentaries to watch them and share them all over. The same thing. Get the one with the Beyond Trees and Joyce Riley. Get both the DVD and the document set so you have it. Go to these websites and get the documents you need to provide care. Share them with everybody.
And use the RAC, VA RAC, GWIR, All their minutes are there. Their reports are out.
That 2008 report that the RAC put out, Jim Benz, is probably the best total report ever done, isn't it?
Yeah, and the 2014 is a pretty daggum good one, too, that he put out in April. Now, the other things are, you know, I have pages on Gulfwar, pages on the library that has all the IOM reports, that have the Regal report, Rockefeller report, Shays report, various reports at the library. I have the Gulfwar research and connected research, be it chronic fatigue, whatever, page where the papers or abstracts are. I have the page for Gulfwar research and recruitment, where anytime I find anybody that's recruiting for studies, I put it out and who to contact. So I try to keep those pages as factual and, you know, not into a lot of discussion, but here it is. Use it. This is your reference pages. It's like your library online. Google things. My God, you can find a lot on the Internet. We have websites that have the Regal Report and the Rockefeller Report on them. Don't be blind. Don't be ill-informed. Wake up. Do your part. Call your senators, please. H.R. 4261 is the Gulfwar Research Reform Act of 2014. We need to get that through by the 1st of September. So we need people calling their senators, two U.S. senators, D.C. office, where they do the legislative work. Speak up for our Desert Storm Memorial. Both of those are cost neutral. It's not going to cost the country, okay? So let's tell them they're cost neutral.
Next week, we're going to have a discussion about the current war and what's happening in Iraq and the Middle East. In the following week, hopefully we'll have one of the top Legal Beagles lawyers answer all your questions on legal effects and the mess with all trying to get medical care and denial of care and what the court cases are. So those are the game plans we have coming up. Denise, any last word? I mean, we just had a 4th of July and we were all flag waving. And what else can we think or do today?
Well, I have a speaker I want to get on as quickly as we can right now. I think he's recovering from a cardiac situation. But Brian Christopher Edge, who right now works for the VA, but he can answer claims questions.
Let's get that lined up then for 3 weeks from now. We got this, okay. I know we got that next week definitely lined up with those experts on the Middle East and then. Hopefully we have the lawyer lined up. If not, we'll get your expert on. We got a whole weeks and weeks all planned out here and get more people together. Anybody else got suggestions for people you want to get on? Get to Denise or I and let us know. Get to Gary Noll and let him know, and we'll do it for you.
You can always reach me at dsnurse@AOL or dsnurse1@yahoo.com or on Facebook, Denise Nichols.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, Denise. Thank you again. God bless you.
Thank you.